I'd like to welcome everyone back to the Duck Pond Wall today, a show here on WEHC where we pretend we're sitting on the Duck Pond Wall and catching up with a friend. And I'm happy to say today to say that we are catching up with Stacy Savinsky, Emory and Henry class of 2014. How you doing, Stacy?
Good. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I like the visual of sitting on the duck pond wall.
Isn't like, that fun?
Brings me back to many a time. Yeah.
So you spent some time sitting on that wall.
Yes, I did. I think the wall was less like fancy than it is now. I think there's been so there was just like a brick wall that was kind of falling into the pond when I was there. But I think the ducks liked it just fine. So
well, we're talking with Stacy today because she's got a couple of cool projects going on, but in particular, you have a new book out called Crescent. Is it Crescent Moon Tea Room?
Yes, the Crescent Moon Tea Room.
And this is a book you've written, and I'm super excited about this because I'm not going to lie, I enjoy talking about witches. Can we talk about witches?
Yes, yes, that's great. We could just talk about witches this whole time, for sure.
tell us what the book is about.
Yeah, so the book is about three witch sisters who own a magical tea shop in 19th century Chicago. And they find out that there's a family curse that's going to cause them to separate by the end of the year. So they try to break the curse in the time they have. But in the process of doing that, they learn a lot about what they actually want from their own destinies and who they are as people. So it's definitely a cozy fantasy. So there's some core themes that are, have a bit more depth, like sisterhood, and, finding yourself while maintaining like links to home, but it's meant to just feel like a warm hug. Like you've just opened the pages and walked into your favorite like coffee shop and they're smelling like all the cinnamon buns and, hearing all the pleasant chatter in the background. So it's definitely cozy in tone while kind of tackling some, themes that are important to the reader probably.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a tricky thing to do, mm-hmm. so that you want to work in a little bit of serious stuff, but you're also giving it, like you say, that feel that you don't feel out of your comfort zone, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was really going for, because the type of literature that I've gravitated towards are things where it makes me think about my own life, my own situation, like what I find meaningful in life, but leaving me feeling uplifted and glad, happy by the end of it. Right. So I've read a lot of literature in my time, with the English, degree at Emory and Henry, and then an English master's and then an English PhD. But even after all that time, I gravitate towards the happy, uplifting stuff in the end,
That makes me happy because there's a lot of literature that will kind of leave you a little bit beaten up. And so I appreciate the fact that you want to couch what you're seeing or what we're reading in something that'll, give us kind of a soft landing when we're done.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's, the book is supposed to really get you thinking about these themes. And like things that are important to you, especially like sisterhood and the relationship to family or like other important women in your life, and get you thinking about, well, what do I want? Like, what do I want out of life? What are my dreams? But it's supposed to get you there in a really comfortable way, I guess. Yes.
Well, and in addition, we're going to talk more about the book because we have not talked nearly enough about witches to make me happy. But I also don't want to forget the fact that, that you're also teaching. You're teaching at Purdue.
Yes. So I teach writing intensive classes at Purdue, mainly to freshmen who are just kind of getting started on their college path. And I teach four of those on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I do have that to balance at the same time. I really enjoy teaching because, they have a lot of energy, the 18-year-olds. And they're just so eager when they do find something that they like to read. They love to talk about it. So it kind of keeps me going. But I'm getting so busy with this book and I'm working on a second book and have a third book kind of lined up to work on in the fall already. So I'll be going full time with writing after this semester.
Once May comes around,
I'll be a full time author.
Is that a scary decision to make, to say, yep, I'm doing this?
I thought it would be scarier when I was thinking of making the transition, but I just got to the point where I was like, you know, when I'm older, if I look back on this time and I didn't take the chance on my dream, because my dream is to be a full-time author, I think that would be a big regret for me, you know? And so that was kind of where I got to, where I was like, what would I be worried about regretting when I'm older? I'm like, I don't think I'll regret, you know, taking this leap when I have the book deal already and just really putting my full force into it and enjoying the time, right? Because the book comes out in October and I really just want to soak in that moment, because this has just been a dream of mine since I could read, like since I started reading, since I could pick up a pencil. And so I was like, you know, I think that at the end of my life, if I'm looking back and I say I didn't give this my full effort because it is my dream, I would regret it. So at this point, I'm mainly excited. I also have a partner who has health insurance, so that makes it a bit less scary. So
yeah, I have said many times that, you know, you can make a lot of different decisions if you don't have the insurance part of it to worry about. Yeah. So good for you for having somebody who can cover that part. That's good.
Yes, exactly. That makes it a lot less scary for sure.
And it sounds like that maybe what the witches are dealing with. Let's see how I got back to witches. What the witches are dealing with, the whole figuring out what they want, is a little bit about what you're doing right now. It's a little bit about figuring out what you want out of life.
Yeah, exactly. I think that happens when you're writing fiction. I think just a bit of yourself always seeps in, like whether you know it or not. And I think in writing the book, it's also about, you know, me figuring out what I want, and the book encouraging me to do so, and the characters encouraging me to do so. Because, you know, by the time I had finalized the last draft of the book, like in November, before all the itty bitty proofreading and all of that, all the content was done this past November. And I felt like I had gone on the journey with the characters through the revision with my editor. And so by the time I turned in the revisions, I was like, yeah, I need to just, you know, quit my job and dedicate myself to the dream, just like my characters did. I'm like, if I can write characters who are brave and courageous enough to take this leap, maybe I should take a lesson from them myself and just go ahead and do it.
That's kind of swell, though, that you're able to kind of, you know, sort of, I don't know, counsel yourself on some things, but you're doing it through the characters in your book. I kind of love that.
Yeah. I'm really grateful for the opportunity. And I think that's what writing creatively does in general, is it lets you get to know more about yourself, like these parts of yourself that are, you know, enfolded in within, you know, your inner being, but you don't have time to bring out and think about and reflect on. And so I'm very grateful for the story, and I'm really grateful for my characters, because I feel like I know myself more after having written them and revised them so many times.
Exactly. You know? Well, we all have to go through some revisions in our own lives here and there. That's for doggone sure.
Yes.
Do you find that your students respond well? Or I'm saying this like, you know, is it hard to get 18-year-olds to write? I guess that's my question.
It is hard. It's very hard to get 18-year-olds to write, but the students at Purdue, I would say I really like them, because they're similar to the ones at Emory and Henry. You know, a lot of first generation college students, a lot of students coming from rural areas, and they're really respectful of one another in conversation. And, you know, reading is just, and talking about reading is all conversation, right? And polite, but energetic and, you know, insightful conversation. And they're really good at that, I think. So I try and give them texts that I think will draw out that discussion. So I have themes, right? So last year, my theme was food. And I had to stop that because I was baking a lot. My husband does the dishes. So he kind of had a moment where he was like, I'm like, we don't have time for you to teach this food class because you're baking all the time and I'm cleaning it up. And so this year, my theme is fashion. So all the texts revolve around a different element of fashion, whether that be fashion in memory or fashion in sustainability or fashion in group identity or fashion and race and ethnicity, fashion and gender. So they really enjoyed it. Like, they're kind of slowing down after spring break, but so am I. So I think that's okay.
Spring fever is real, and don't even act like it's not, because we're all at that point of thinking it's time to do yes. something else for a while. Well, and let's talk about what you're asking them to read. I'm kind of curious about your reading list. Share a couple of things you're getting them to read that you're actually able to get them to get excited about.
Yeah. So there's a book that I like to teach called Worn Stories by Emily Spivat. And Netflix actually adapted this in 2020. And it's what this person did. She's like a journalist, and she went and asked a bunch of friends and acquaintances, what's the most meaningful garment that you've kept in your wardrobe? And she has them pull it out, and she photographs it, and then they tell the story of the garment. And there's a lot of things that people like inherited from family members, but there's other things that they just kept it because it reminds them very viscerally of how they felt in a given moment. Huh. And I do a bit of a kind of neuroscience in my own research, especially sensory studies is what it's called. So I talk to the students about what's going on in your brain when you pick up, you know, a garment that you have in the back of your closet, and you feel it and you smell it, and like all the memories come back. And I think that's been their favorite piece the whole time, because they're still talking about it even this far into the semester. Some other things we read Virginia Woolf's Orlando, and we watch the movie with Tilda Swinton and talk about the costuming and how they would, you know, costume different things and design. And then we watch a movie called Daughters of the Dust, which was directed by Julie Dash from 1992, and talk about the costuming there as well. We read a bit of Utopia and talk about what how clothing would function in an ideal society, especially from the level of sustainability. And then right now they're working on sociology of fashion projects. So they're going out and surveying people about different topics related to fashion, and then putting together a research paper based on the responses. So they're getting a range. They're getting a wide range of things.
I want to come take this class. This is so interesting. I love how you're doing that. Well, what was your PhD work in?
Yeah, so my PhD, it was in English, and my specialty was 19th, early 20th century women writers. And what I looked at in particular was how these women authors described the senses, so touch, taste, smell, sight. And I just looked at that really in depth to see, because often these authors wouldn't rank the senses in the way we're normally accustomed, because normally we get a lot of description of sight, we get a lot of description of sound, but they were very invested in describing touch, describing taste, describing like these kind of quote unquote lower senses, and elevating them to make them, you know, just as important as sight or sound. And that was often tied in with their social agendas, right? If they were saying, you know, if the way we view the senses is like coded and ranked, what does that say about how we operate, you know, in the world? And how can we, you know, change our perception of the senses and the importance that all the senses have, and how would that change our perception of the world and how we relate to one another? And that really influenced my fiction writing, because my fiction is set in the 19th century. It focuses on woman characters, and my writing is very much trying to draw out the senses and how different things make you feel. So in the book, there's a lot of descriptions of the tea room, and there's a lot of descriptions of how it feels to sit down after a long day and wrap your fingers around a warm porcelain cup. And so I really try and draw the reader in through sensory description. And I think that's where my academic work has transferred over the most, because I was so invested in studying how 19th century women writers, you know, just write about the senses and what that can do between the writer and the reader and the relationship between them, that's really, I think, come through in my own fiction writing, like this sensory description that makes the reader feel a certain way depending on the chapter and like the progression of the plot.
Okay, that is fascinating. And we're going, that is fascinating. I want to remind everybody we're talking today with Stacy Savinsky, Emory Henry Class of 2014, who has just published a really cool book called The Crescent Moon Tea Room. And we're talking about that, and we're talking about how she writes. She's also an English professor at Purdue University. Let's talk about the thing with the senses just a minute more, because I've never heard anybody talk about that before. And, you know, it's funny. We know, like academically, I guess, that smell is really important to memory, and that touch makes a big difference. But those are hard things to write about. I mean, because usually when you write about visual things, you're trying to find a way to write about it that everybody experiences it kind of the same way, you know, and you have a sort of a toolbox of words you can use about color and size and all those things. But touch and smell and taste, sometimes that is like really individualized. So how do you get down to writing about that?
Yeah. So I try when I'm writing, I guess the main thing that I think when I'm writing anything is it's not necessarily, you know, what do I want to happen? And it's not even what should I write. The main thing I think about is how do I want the reader to feel when they read this line? And that's kind of my guiding principle. So when I'm writing about sound, when I'm writing about smell and taste and touch in particular, I really try and sit back and say, well, what's the metaphor I need to get the reader to respond in a way that they feel when they drink a cup of tea? So for instance, like, if I want the reader to feel like they've come to a moment of peace at the end of the day, because that's really what happens. Like when we sit and drink a cup of tea at the end of the day, it's not really how it tastes. It's how it makes us feel. So, you know, if I'm describing that, I say, you know, the characters sitting down and they pick up the tea and feel the warm porcelain between their fingers. And as they're like having the steam and the smell hitting the nose before even the taste, tingles running up the toes to and then up the spine, right? So it's not so much like what the thing tastes like, but how you feel in the moment of expectation before you taste the thing.
That is
so
awesome.
You'll see when you read the book, you'll see a lot of that scattered throughout this kind of, you know, sensory descriptions that are meant to make you feel the peace or the joy or the relief that you do in these really important, I think, sensory moments that we don't give ourselves enough time to think about, like these moments of the day where we look for these simple pleasures that do ground us and do really important things in our lives, but we often kind of discard or, you know, don't make time for. And so the book is really kind of also shining a light on the importance of simple moments and the magic of simple moments and kind of the transformative power of those instances in our lives.
That makes me happy too, because I don't know if you saw it, there's an opinion piece in New York Times, I think this past week, and part of it is about the fact that the pursuit of joy shouldn't be something you have to apologize for making time for. You know, it should be part of your life, not just something you're like, oh, I'll get to that when I have time. It should be your life. It should be part of your life.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what the book is kind of shedding light on, because these moments of rest are also about moments of like reflection, right? Like sitting down and really giving ourselves time to reflect not only on our day, but who we are, what we want, what our relationships are like, and how we want them to stay the same or change. And so that's why these moments are kind of tucked pretty frequently throughout the book, because that's what the characters are dealing with, you know, wondering who they are, wondering like if what they have is kind of the end all be all for them, or if they want something different for themselves. And so that's why there are so many simple but really significant moments scattered throughout, where they're getting physically comfortable enough, you know, like tucking themselves into a warm quilt, like pushing themselves closer to the fire, because it's in those moments of like relaxation and rest, I think, where you have important reflections come through about who you are and what you want.
You know, you're covering a lot of heavy stuff about in a sweet little book about witches. I'm just saying, yes. You're getting all that in there.
Exactly. It is a very sweet little book about witches. And there are these core themes. And that's what I think the people who have read the book so far, like my editor and then some early readers, have commented on, is that it's an uplifting book. It's a sweet book. It makes you feel really warm. But it also makes you think about the really important things in your lives. And it grounds you in that way. Like there's a depth to it. They say, right? I don't want to like toot my own horn, but they say that there's kind of a depth to it that you might not expect in a cozy fantasy book,
right.
But it gives you all the good feels and the warmth that you would want from the genre.
I love it. And so cozy fantasy, that is an actual like category for literature, right?
It is. It's an emerging category. I think some of the works that people would be most familiar with are like Howl's Moving Castle is kind of the epitome of cozy fantasy. Like you get like the fantasy elements, but it's grounded. It's not like Lord of the Rings where you're like traipsing off like on faraway destinations. It's often centered around home and kind of the cozy qualities of home, right? Some more recent books are Legends and Lattes is a very big and popular cozy fantasy right now. And then, you know, there's a lot of witch books that are coming out. So like this year, there's Tea and Treason just came out in early February. In the fall, The Unfortunate Side Effects of Heartbreak and Magic came out by Brian Randall, and that exploded. So we're seeing people just kind of gravitating towards the genre because it does tackle like important themes like, you know, relationships, like finding who you are. And there are often like trials that need to be overcome, but it leaves you feeling uplifted and warm by the end of the day, right?
Sounds cool. And I cannot wait to read your book, which leads me to the big question. How do we get it? It comes out in October.
Yeah.
How do we get it?
Yeah, it comes out October 1st, and you can pre-order it already wherever books are sold. So it's being sold at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Books A Million, and then your independent local bookstore should already be able to pre-order it for you. You can get it in paperback. You can get it in Kindle or ebook, any kind of ebook like on Nook. And then you can also pre-order the audiobook because they've given the green light for the audiobook. So I'll be helping with the casting for that in the next few months. And then that will be available on publication. So if you prefer audiobook, you can already pre-order that and just get that the day it comes out on October 1st.
Stacy, who's your publisher?
Yeah, my publisher is Atria Books. So Atria Books is an imprint of Simon & Schuster, and I signed with them in August. My editor is Elizabeth Heady, and she was just absolutely amazing. I've loved working with Atria Books, and they've been so supportive of the novel and Simon & Schuster as a whole. So Simon & Schuster has this program where they pick one book out of the hundreds of books that they're publishing during a certain season. And they selected mine for that category. So they picked it for their top shelf favorite pick for fall 2024
of
all the books that their imprints are publishing. So that was nice. That was at that point I got the news for that. Not many people aside from my editor had read it and like, you know, said they liked it. So all of a sudden I heard that all these people had read the book and out of all these other books and voted it as their favorite one for the fall.
Oh,
and I was kind
wow.
of flabbergasted by that, but extremely thankful. So that just means that they're going to be putting a lot more into the marketing of the book and that they're showing their support of the book and put their literal seal of approval on the front of the cover.
Well, then you are going to need to quit your day job because you're going to go on a book tour, I bet, aren't you?
Yeah, there'll be a few. We're organizing the book tour, but I'll have the launch here in Indianapolis, most likely. I'll be going to New Orleans in November as well. And that's actually where I got the idea for the book, was on a trip to New Orleans. So I wanted to stop down there. And then, you know, my hometown is in Virginia. My parents are in Stanton. My sister's in Elkton. Brothers in Charlottesville. So when I come back in November for the holidays, I'd like to organize a few stops. And then, of course, you know, if I'm passing down 81, I will, of course, try and do something in your neck of the woods.
Could you feel me hinting for that? Because that would be a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed then that we'll get you on campus. What would you say to students who are here now about doing the very thing that you had done about pursuing mm-hmm. your dream? But you didn't just graduate and say, by golly, I'm going to write a book. I mean, you've got your master's, you've got your PhD. I mean, you're mm-hmm. teaching, you're doing all the things, but you're also pursuing, you know, your dream of being an author. And so what do you say to young people?
Yeah, I would say, like, my biggest piece of advice is, you know, the big thing about the fantasy genre and what it's taught me is, it's how we can use fantasy in our own lives, right? So you need to give yourself permission to dream as big as you possibly can, right? Because if you limit your own fantasies for yourself, your reality can only grow as far as the boundaries of your own fantasies, right? So in this time, this is the time where people start to limit themselves. They're like, oh, I can only, after graduation, I can really only dream this far, and I'm going to box myself in. You know, let yourself keep dreaming and let yourself keep fantasizing about the biggest things that could happen in your life, because your reality can only go as far as your fantasies do. So that would be my advice to my fellow Emery and Henry folks. Yes.
That is beautiful. And I know that they will take your advice on that. You have another book coming out too, right?
Yeah, so the next book is actually, I signed a 2-book contract. So the next one will likely come out fall of 2025, but I am not at liberty to tell you what the project is about as per my contract. But if you follow me on my Instagram and follow my kind of and Facebook and follow kind of my news, as I am allowed to say things, I say things and share them. So just follow me on there to keep updated with my latest projects. And then once I have permission, legal permission, to tell you what the next project is, I will definitely do that.
Gotcha. And if we want to follow you, it's Stacy and spell Savinsky for us to make sure we got it right.
Yeah. It's Stacy and then Sivinsky on Instagram. And then you can also find me on Facebook that way, and Twitter. If there's a social media platform, it's likely I'm on it. I also have a TikTok under that same name.
Perfect. Dr. Stacy Savinsky, Purdue University, and following her dream of being an author. New book is out. Oh, well, we'll be out in October of 2024. Crescent Moon Tea Room. Thank you so much for sharing with us what you're doing. This is very exciting, and I'm so happy for you.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is great. I always love coming back to Emery and Henry, even virtually.
So. Even virtually, exactly. I want to thank everyone for being with us today on the Duck Pond Wall. Please stay tuned to WEHC-FM, because this is the voice of Southwest Virginia.